So that was last week, Sam. A ton of really interesting games we needed to discuss. This week, there's only one.
Just one, and the only one that maybe we'll think about at the end of this season. As good as these games have been, this has a chance to go down as one of those games that, you know, I think since 1943, there's been 22 number one versus number two games. Many of them have gone on as some of the greatest football games in college football history. You don't want to put that kind of expectation level on a game like this because sometimes it disappoints, but it has a chance to be that type of game. And I think jumping into it, I like to think of these as two heavyweight fighters, so let's just go over the tail of the tape like you would in any boxing fight for a championship level.
Before you do, I just need to say that what adds even more interest to this game for me, you know, everybody had it circled since the beginning of the year when LSU beat Oregon the way they did, and obviously Alabama was rolling. You know, we knew that both these teams could be undefeated heading into this game. Since then, we've seen both teams dominant. Obviously, this game has had a hype machine built into it from the get-go. But I think it's interesting that 2 weeks ago, Michigan State and Wisconsin played the game of the year. And then last week, Stanford and USC one-upped that and played the game of the year. And they weren't surprises. We had those games pegged as big games, and they both lived up to not only their own hype, but exceeded it. And so now we have this game that's hyped even more than those two were, arguably combined. And the hype it has to live up to, I mean, what has to happen in this game for this game to live up to the hype?
I mean, I've heard 1,000 nicknames, Armageddon and Alabama, all these different names. I don't know what has to happen other than if these teams hit each other the way they've hit other teams, they're going to collide and you're going to see fire and sparks. And
I think we will literally see, hell and brimstone out there. But yeah, let's go over the tale of the tape.
So let's just start with the obvious stuff. Alabama is the best defense in the country by the eye test, but also statistically. They are the number one ranked defense in the country. LSU doesn't trail far behind at fourth in the country currently in terms of total defense. Scoring defense, Bama is one, LSU is three. I mean, if you look at it, Alabama gives up 6.9 points a game. Ridiculous. LSU's at 11.5, still amazing. They both average 39 points, a little bit more a game. It's so negligible, the difference between these two teams across the board statistically, that if you look at it, I mean, the game is going to be won in such minuscule ways in terms of detail. Bama has allowed one 100-yard rusher in the last 55 games. That's a stat that stuck out to me. LSU has more interceptions on defense this season than passes completed on them over 15 yards. So if you try to go down the field 15 yards, you're more likely to get the ball intercepted than even if it just falls short or whatever. They really just don't give up yards, and they don't give up points. And if you look at it, the thing that sticks out to me is LSU's defensive front averages about 273 pounds per guy. Alabama has an offensive line that's about well over 300 per man. So I look at this, and the first thing that I want to know is, will LSU be able to overcome the power and the size for four quarters? We know they can overwhelm a spread speed offense like Oregon, but what will they do when a team lines up and tries to power it through you?
Well, before we try and answer that, I just want to stick with these statistics, because as negligible as they are, Alabama has the edge in every statistic. Yeah. And you can obviously write a little bit of that off because of the difference in schedules. Of course, LSU had to go against those Oregon and West Virginia spread attack offenses that might have beefed up those numbers against a little bit. But, you know, for Alabama, looking at the offense, Alabama has 228 passing yards to LSU's 183 passing yards per game, which surprised me because Jarrett Lee is the one that's having the more surprising season. But A.J. McCarron, by the numbers, has obviously thrown for more yards. And then rushing yards, Alabama has 229 per game to LSU's 189 per game. And then looking at, you mentioned the total rankings of the defense, both defensively and points against, but looking specifically at the pass and the rush, Alabama's only allowing 135 passing yards a game to LSU's 174, and only 44 rushing yards against to LSU 76. Now, we're splitting hairs here. They're the two best defenses in the country. They're both in the top three statistically, and you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that would disagree that they're the two best defenses in the country, if not two of the top three. So you're splitting hairs, but the hair always splits Alabama's way.
No, it is. And the thing is, even when you look at who they've played so far, I think LSU has the best win with that game against Oregon. But after that, Alabama has the next best win with the win over Arkansas, which is close.
Yeah.
And they have a win, obviously, against Penn State that looks better by the day. Now, we can dispute how we feel about Penn State, but it still looks like the next best win. I mean, when you look at LSU, they beat West Virginia, but part of the reason those statistics are a little bit tough for them in the passing game is in that game, Geno Smith threw for 463 yards at LSU. You take those 463 yards out of it, and it makes a pretty big difference. But yeah, you know, Alabama across the board, they say, you know, their defensive line might not be as athletic, as fast, but it's bigger, and the athleticism isn't far enough away that when you consider what Alabama has done along their defensive line, and certainly in the secondary, it's hard to find a huge edge, but the edge always does lean a little bit towards Alabama, and I think that's a story that we're going to find throughout going over this game.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the kind of game it might be.
Yeah, we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the matchup a little bit more, get away from the numbers a little bit, but the one thing that I do have to say that LSU holds the advantage in is turnovers. LSU with the plus 15 turnover rating to Alabama's plus 6. LSU has forced 18 turnovers. Like you said, they've got a ton of interceptions. They've got 11 interceptions. They've got 7 fumble recoveries to Alabama's 5 fumble recoveries and 9 interceptions. But more importantly, LSU has only turned the ball over 3 times all year. They've lost 2 fumbles, and they've only thrown 1 interception, which if you would have told me that LSU would have only thrown 1 interception all year, I would have been a bit surprised by that, considering what we thought they were in the passing game coming into the year. Alabama has thrown 5 interceptions and lost 3 fumbles, so they've got 8 turnovers, and they've only forced 14 to LSU's 18-3 ratio. So in a game like this, that's going to be decided by very few points, that's going to be a defensive game, turnovers are going to be a big deal. The team that wins the turnover battle is going to have a massive edge,
yep.
And that's one major stat that LSU has held the edge in to this point.
Yeah, and the other one being, if you wanted to look for another edge, I would argue special teams is an LSU's
favorite. That's a great point, too.
And in a game like this, I mean, special teams is always huge. Even in games in this series in the past, it's proven huge. And LSU, they're probably the best punting team in the country. They have an unbelievable punter who always seems to pin it inside the 20 and give them great field position. But they also have electrifying return men and as we know with Les Miles, he's never afraid to fake a punt or a field goal in the most creative ways possible. And in a game like this, I'm sure Nick Saban will prepare for that, but you have to look at that as another area where they could have an edge. But I mean, for me, the thing that I immediately pointed to with this game that I can't wait to see how it plays out, how is the offensive coordinator Jim McElwain going to scheme against LSU's defensive coordinator John Chavis? Because if I'm John Chavis, the first thing I'm going to do is say, I'm putting 9 in the box.
Yeah.
I am going to take Trent Richardson away. Yeah, you might be bigger than us on the offensive line, but if we bring 9 guys, the extra numbers with a defense like ours, believe me, we will hold
Trent
Richardson.
And with all the athleticism on that defense.
They're going to feel confident that if they can bring 9, that they can stop Trent Richardson. The question is, will A.J. McCarron allow them to bring 9 on a consistent basis? Because I want to know if A.J. McCarron can beat this team with his arm. I'm not convinced yet that we've seen McCarron tested to the degree, even at home, that he's going to have to be in this game, and he's completing 67% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, but he hasn't been asked to do a whole lot. I think he's going to be asked to do more in this game than he has at any point in the season, and how will he respond?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, both quarterbacks, but, you know, Trent Richardson is indisputably the best offensive player on
Definitely.
The field, so the game plan has to be to stop him. But, you know, you stuff 9 guys in the box, you are leaving that passing game vulnerable.
And this is why, so the key to the game, to me, is when you think about Alabama, the first thing you probably think about is Nick Saban, right? The second thing you'd probably think about is Trent Richardson, and then maybe you'd think about the defense, a guy like Dante Hightower, maybe even the offensive line. How far down the list of thoughts that you have about Alabama do you have to get before you think about Marquise Mays and Darius Hanks? Because my argument would be those names are not near the top of your list of people you think about in Alabama. They need to be this week, because those guys are going to be one-on-one. They're probably going to be matched up against guys like Morris Claiborne and Tyrann Mathieu, some of the best in the country, if not the best in the country. How are they going to do in that matchup? Because the way Alabama's offense works, it's a pro-style, play-action offense. You're going to have not that many receivers on the field, two, maybe three. Those guys are going to have to win their one-on-ones, can they?
You know Tyrann Mathieu is not going to lose a one-on-one right to virtually anyone in the country. So that's the thing. If you're stopping the run with nine guys and Tyrann Mathieu is shutting down whoever he's going to be covering, where are McCarron's options going to be in this one?
Yeah, and you know, the flip side, obviously, is that as good as Jarrett Lee has been, and he, again, has a great touchdown-interception ratio, I'm curious as to how Alabama is going to deal with the two quarterback system, and maybe even how is LSU going to deal with it? Because will they get their two quarterbacks out of rhythm? What if they're both going three and out a lot? You know, how are you going to manage when to put Jefferson in, when to run designed runs, when to take Lee and try to take shots down the field? I actually think that LSU has the better playmakers on the outside as another advantage. I love Reuben Randall. I like Russell Shepard. I think they're flat out better than anything Alabama has on their
In the wide receiving core, no question.
I mean, Reuben Randall's a legitimate 6'4 physical target that, as good as some of those secondary players are for Alabama, he can win those one-on-one matchups. But
if he commands commands double coverage, can the rest of that wide receiver core do enough?
I at least think you have guys behind him and Beckham and a guy like Russell Shepard that are capable of making plays in a way that they've shown they can in the past. I just wonder, will LSU be able to run the ball? I mean, clearly that stat about Alabama only allowing 100-yard rusher in the last 55 games.
Yeah, and only 44 yards a game.
They don't need to get to they don't need a 100-yard rusher in this game, but what they need is they need to stay balanced enough to keep the defense honest so that they can still take shots down the field, because LSU is going to have to win, I think, both of these teams have to play with balance. But LSU has to be able to do what they've done in the past, like we saw last week, where both Lee and Jefferson bombed that ball out. They need to be able to take shots down the field, and Alabama's not going to let them do that if they're able to key in on a guy like Reuben Randall.
Yeah, the problem is I have enough respect for Trent Richardson to believe that even if LSU is making stopping the run their number one priority, Trent Richardson can still find a way to not rush for 120 yards and two touchdowns like he would against a lesser team, but to rush for 80 yards, maybe break a 15-20 yarder that gets you into that range to get a touchdown. I don't see it out of Spencer Ware. I don't see it out of the LSU running game against this Alabama defense. I don't see the running game being out. Now, on the flip side, I can see LSU making the plays in the passing game that maybe Alabama can't.
And that's the key, yeah.
But on the road, we have to talk about the fact that this game is in Alabama. You know, the atmosphere in this game is everything. And, you know, Jarrett Lee and Jordan Jefferson, they both played great this year. But this atmosphere is going to be totally different. And you're right, both teams are going to have a balanced attack. But I believe that Alabama can get away with running the ball more than LSU can. So LSU, I think, is going to have to pass the ball more. And yeah, if they can pull it off, they win the game, but I think that's where it spells disaster for LSU.
Yeah, and you know, LSU, the way they won this game in the past, you know, last year included, is Trent Richardson's had 600-yard games, he has 17 touchdowns, but in this matchup, he ran for 28 yards on 6 carries last year. He got banged up 2 years ago as a healthy freshman, 27 yards on 6 carries. So LSU has seen this guy before. Now, he hasn't been the featured back that he will be now, but I do believe LSU can stop him. I believe they can hold him under 100 yards. The question is, In doing that, do they commit way too much and give McCarron some confidence, because he's going to have more space than he's ever had probably in his career, because LSU is going to do everything they can to stop Trent Richardson. And if they get passes early, that's going to scare LSU and probably back them off, and then Trent Richardson will have room.
Right. I don't love AJ McCarron, but if the question is, can he take advantage of a defense that's not giving him any respect at all at home, yeah, I think he can.
Yeah. And I mean, here's the thing. I mean, LSU, as we've said, they're number two in the nation behind Oklahoma State in turnover margin. So that's a great stat for them. Alabama, you know, they're at 0.75 as far as a turnover ratio. Still solid, but not nearly the degree that LSU is. They've got on the road. LSU has got to make that continue to trend their way, or else it's going to be a long day. And again, I'm looking for reasons to like LSU in this game, and there actually are a few. But here's the one thing that I have to say about LSU that worries me a little bit. In their history, since 1958, they haven't gone undefeated in a season, wow, which is stunning. I mean, if you think about LSU, even under Nick Saban, I mean, the Nick Saban years were great for LSU. They haven't gone undefeated since 1958. And while the program's been unbelievable under Les Miles, they've had more bizarre finishes, more wacky moments, more crazy things. LSU has never lost fewer than two games under Les Miles. Even the year they won the national championship, they lose two games at least every year. So if you're looking for a loss, there's undoubtedly the feeling that this would be it, and it might even result in another two-loss season. I don't know if I can trust a team that has gone this long without being able to finish a season with an undefeated record or even a one-loss record.
Yeah, it's hard when you're looking at trends like we've talked about, because, you know, those are past teams, mm-hmm, and you can't fault past teams for, you know, what these current teams are doing. It's hard to imagine LSU getting to two losses this season, mm-hmm, but it's not hard to imagine them getting to one, obviously, here. And, you know, we can talk about the future prospects of these teams a bit later, but assuming LSU wins this game, they could still slip up against Arkansas. That's always a tough game for them.
Yeah, they lost 3 of 4 to Arkansas.
Right. So we could see that. But, you know, last year LSU beat Alabama, and Alabama was a 7-point road favorite in that one, and LSU pulled it off. But I think that Alabama team didn't necessarily hold a candle to this one, despite the fact that statistically their defense ended up, you know, in the top five in the nation. This is a much more polished Alabama team, arguably an even better defense than their 2009 team. I've heard a couple people arguing that, and you could certainly argue that. Home field is everything in this game, and I honestly think that's the deciding factor. I mean, Alabama, from the spread perspective, is a 4.5-point favorite in this game. I think that has a lot to do with home field advantage. I think that also has to do with the statistics that we were talking about. But, you know, I don't know that they're going to win it by 4.5, but I do think they end up winning it because they make a few more plays on offense and because they have that home field advantage.
Yeah, and in a game of elite players all over the field, it just seems like Alabama's are slightly better, slightly more.
That's how I feel,
if
yeah.
If you look at it by the calculations of a lot of draft scouts and things, Alabama is going to field about 15 players who will end up getting drafted, 4 who are probably going to be taken as the first player at their position. Obviously, Trent Richardson, a corner like Drake Kirkpatrick will probably go number one in his, safety Mark Barron will probably go number one in his, and then you have an outside linebacker like Courtney Upshaw, and that doesn't even include, you know, a guy like Dante Hightower. It's amazing what these guys are going to be able to do probably at the next level and what they already are. But maybe even more frightening is scouts also say that all 11 of LSU's defensive starters are going to be pros at some point. I just think, though, that when you look at it, and that's an amazing stat to think about, but when you look at it, it just seems like Alabama's players are a little bit, they're going to be the guys that are more elite in the pros. LSU will all get to the pros, but Alabama has the game changers that you're looking for on the field. The only guy I concern myself with, again, is AJ McCarron, because he's had some accuracy trouble when he goes down the field. They don't ask him to do it that much. A lot of those yards are after the catch that they have. So will he be able to get enough room in a ball-hawking secondary with two legitimate NFL starting corners? Will they be able to get that? Other than that, it seems like an Alabama win here, but I don't know by how much.
Yeah, because say what you want about Jarrett Lee and Jordan Jefferson, but they have experience. Yeah. They've played in tough games before. Yeah. AJ McCarron, this is the biggest game of his career, obviously, and all it takes is one mistake. In a game like this, it only takes one mistake. But I want to ask you this, since you're more of a personnel guy than I am. Obviously, you can't go wrong with any of these players on either side of the ball, as you just pointed out. But we talked a couple podcasts ago about the importance of the defensive line, mm-hmm, and in the SEC especially, how teams have driven their defensive line all the way to the championship year in and year out. which team is going to win the battle of the lines in this game?
It's funny. I like LSU's defensive line better in terms of pure athleticism. I don't know that that's going to help them in this game because it was on full display against Oregon. If you want to see what the best defensive line athletically in the country looks like, put on that game film.
And that was, I think you're getting ready to say, that was the perfect matchup for that defensive line. An athletic offensive line that really didn't have the athletes.
They were like salivating at that kind of offense because, you know, with no disrespect to Oregon, they weren't afraid of LaMichael James or Darren Thomas at all. It was right playing and right to their hand. This is a whole nother monster. Alabama prides itself on how physical and big they are in the offensive line, and they go downhill. And if there's one weakness, it might be hitting LSU directly in the mouth because they are a little bit undersized. But, you know, on the other side of the ball, Alabama's defensive line is not that much worse in terms of athleticism, and they're bigger, and they are space eaters. All they do is eat space and plug up the holes. I don't think there's going to be any room for Spencer Ware to run, who is a downhill runner, and there's going to be no, you know, he's not going to get outside on this defense, but there's not going to be any room up the middle either. Maybe Ford can get a little bit of outside room, but honestly, their only chance, I don't think, is to go with very much. They got to keep them honest with the run, but it's those vertical Reuben Randall routes that they just have to win against very good corners. Otherwise, I like Alabama's defensive line because they are the perfect mix of size and athleticism.
Yeah, because hearing you talk about it, I mean, that's kind of the vibe I got from this game, and that's why I have to lean Alabama, because, like I said, Trent Richardson isn't going to have a huge day. If he has a huge day, that would be a
Heisman.
Stunner.
Heisman.
Oh, no question. The Heisman's done. I mean, sorry, Andrew, yeah. But it's all his if he has a huge day. But with this offensive line pushing a very athletic defensive line around, LSU is going to need support in the running game. Alabama's defensive line might not need a whole lot of support, so you can get back, pin your ears back for that big passing game, which is likely to come, and that would fall right into Alabama's hands. That's kind of how it sounds like we both see it going. Do you think home field is a big deal
Definitely.
Here?
Definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, somebody was writing an article about Bryant-Denny Stadium and how much it's evolved. It wasn't that highly thought of not that long ago as far as a home field advantage. Alabama's a storied program. They've always had a great home field advantage, but not the monster advantage that you see even LSU have in Death Valley. Now, they've made so many advancements that the noise level in that stadium is unbelievable, and they are obviously going to be more juiced now than they've ever been. So I think that Alabama's going to feed off of that, especially in the running game, and it might even help Trent Richardson push that 75-yard mark, maybe pushing towards 100, which could be enough to do what they need out of this. That's what you look for out of your home field. Give you the extra push, the extra boost, maybe make LSU a little more tired, and it could be a difference in this game.
Yeah, I think LSU's strength is outlasting teams and getting into that second half where they can really start to push teams around and their conditioning and athleticism comes out. But it's not going to happen in this game against Alabama because they're built the same way. So all four quarters, you have to figure both teams are going to be playing their best. And, you know, it could so easily go either way. A couple trends, since we were talking a bit about trends earlier, that I want to bring up here. LSU is 7-3 straight up in their last 10 games against Alabama. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have to factor in that Alabama is a much different team now than they were through a lot of those losses. Over the last four games, it's been split 2-2. But I do think it's interesting, speaking of Alabama's home field advantage, that Alabama has lost four of the last five games they've played against LSU in their home stadium. Yeah. Now, they won the last one, but they lost the four previous ones. Funny thing about that stat, of course, two of those four losses came with Nick Saban on the other side of the sidelines at LSU. So you could argue that Nick Saban always wins in this stadium, regardless of who he's coaching.
No, that's it. And again, that's what's so stunning. As many great teams as LSU has had, the fact that they haven't been able to go undefeated in one of these years, and really their glory years these days, in this decade, is surprising. But no, that matchup has been very good to them lately. And I know Alabama is aware of that, and I think that they believe this is the best team they've had in a while, especially defensively, even with that 09 team, as you said. So if it's going to happen, I think this is the year that they really start to assert themselves in this matchup. But, you know, for me, it's just one of those scores where I could totally see it being like a 20-16 type of game with Alabama on top. It just looks like it's going to be a classic. I love defensive football, so, it's not going to bother me that we don't have the shootout like we did against USC and and Stanford. But what are you thinking as far as a score?
Well, I have to say from a gambling perspective, Ian, because that's kind of what got me into college football, just the fascination of trying to pick games against the spread and whatnot. 4.5 seems like a pretty good spread to me, because as much as I immediately lean LSU plus 4.5, because to me, this has to be a game that ends by 3 or 4 points, doesn't it? I mean, the way these two teams are built, it strikes me. The score I keep going back to in my head is 17-14 Alabama. That's just kind of what, if you ask me about a score, that's what jumps out to me. But look at the last 5 games that these two teams have played. Last year was the field goal game. LSU beat them by a field goal. But the year before, Alabama wins by 9. Year before that, they win by 6. Year before that, LSU wins by 7, 41-34. That was an offensive showdown in Saban's first year with Alabama. And the year before that, LSU won by 14. So 4 of the last 5 games between these two teams have been decided by 6 points or more. So that's interesting. Another interesting thing, because of those margins and because of the fact that these teams have actually found a way to score, 4 of the last 5 games have gone over the total. And here's a game that I would think with these two defenses, I should go with the under. Last year it was a push, so the over is 4-0-1 in this game. Pretty crazy. You're thinking 17-14, but you know, you look at these two teams offensively, and you don't see a whole lot that you love by the yardage numbers, but there's a reason why Alabama is ranked 12th and LSU is ranked 13th, and like you said, by the most minuscule of percentages, that they both average just over 39 points a game. It comes down to special teams, it comes down to turnovers, it comes down to these big plays that they make. And you're not expecting that in a game like this, but you just never know.
Yeah, and again, Alabama is the best offense statistically in the SEC, which surprised even me. I thought maybe Arkansas would be there. But the thing about them, they're so balanced. They run for 229 yards a game, and they pass for 228. So when you're really looking for what is the little difference going to be, that ability to stay balanced, if they can do it in this game, could be the reason that they just squeak out on top. But again, it's one of those games that I just hope that it is one of those 3 or 4 point thrillers, because it would be surprising and disappointing to see like somehow a 10 or 13 point win by one of these teams.
Yeah, I could see a 20-10 type of game where maybe it is 13-10 throughout most of the game and then one team pulls away late. But that's what I was kind of saying when we were starting talking about this game. What does this game have to do to live up to these expectations? Does it have to go into multiple overtimes? Right. Is just a field goal to win it in the waning seconds enough?
I mean, if we compare it to the two games we've seen lately, I mean, you know, we want that entertainment value of overtimes or Hail Mary passes.
Right, and we know it's going to be a different type of entertainment because it's a defensive football game, which those two clearly weren't. So I think we'd be happy with a 14-10 type of game, because that's what we're looking for out of these two teams. But will that satisfy us? That's yet to be seen. Before we wrap this up, I just kind of want to ask you your thoughts on what people are saying about, you know, obviously these are the two best teams in the country. I can't imagine anybody at this point would think otherwise. You could have made an argument for Oklahoma before they lost that game. Love what Oklahoma State is doing, but it's not really debatable as much as we love Stanford, too. These are the two best teams in the nation. They're going to decide it on the football field. And some people say if this game is as close as we anticipate it being, that a rematch of this game should happen in the national championship game. What's your feelings about that?
A lot of people I really respect have said absolutely not, which came out as a surprise to me.
I've read the same.
You know, one of those things where it's like if a team doesn't win their side of a conference, even you know they finish second in their own division, much less in the conference, much less in the entire picture, then they shouldn't be playing for a national championship. I get that. I understand that. And actually, I certainly beat that drum when Michigan and Ohio State had this situation go on a few years ago. And I'm glad I did, because the Florida game, I'm glad a lot of people did, because that Florida team ended up, you know, demolishing Ohio State. But there's something about this one that if it was like a 1 point game that came down to the fourth, you know, some 1 minute left and a team kicks a field goal to win it, I don't know if I could look at a situation where I kept them out, assuming that Stanford or Oklahoma State found a way to lose, and then you had a Boise State team that was undefeated. I mean, a one-loss team, I understand the argument about that. And certainly, you know, if Boise State was undefeated, and maybe even if one other team was, I'd take a serious look. But if both Oklahoma State and Stanford are undefeated, and you're going to vault an Alabama or an LSU over both of them, that would be hard for me, because I have too much respect for the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and those teams as they're currently structured to say you're not good enough to play in a game over a one-loss team that's second in their own division.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what you just said, and I also agree with what some of these people that you're talking about have said, that if we only get one national championship, well, you know, a lot of us want a playoff, obviously. We want to see all these things shake out the right way, but if we're only going to get one game, why do we want to see a rematch? Why don't we want to see the winner of this game go up against a Stanford or an Oklahoma State or even a Boise State, just to see a new game, to see a new storyline play out on the field? It's funny, I'm glad you brought up that people were saying that whole, if you finish second in your division or you're second in your conference, that you don't deserve to be in there. That doesn't make any sense to me logically, and I know you weren't saying that, but I'm saying if the two best teams in the world are in the same division, and the rest of the world sucks, that doesn't mean that those aren't the one and two teams. That it's funny, because I've heard at least three or four different sports reporters use that exact terminology. If you can't win your own conference, you don't belong in the championship game. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. There are plenty of more logical ways to go about saying you don't want to see a rematch than that one, in my opinion.
I think both of us, this is a lot more for us about respect for Stanford and Oklahoma State than it is talking about divisions or conferences. I mean, right now the SEC West has three of the top seven teams in the country. So what in the world do we need to say other than forget the division? That's just a great set of football teams.
Right.
You know, it's more that we're talking about, for, you know, division conference aside, Oklahoma State and Stanford deserve to be taken as serious threats if they're undefeated. They deserve to find their way into a game like that. And if they're not undefeated, I would certainly look back at the argument of putting teams in the same division into a rematch. I just think that there are teams out there that are undefeated that need a serious look.
Well, there's no question, and I would be really disappointed, you know, and I think it would just really be an SEC bias to argue that a rematch is deserved over an undefeated Oklahoma State or an undefeated Stanford. Because like you said, you can't ask a team in a respected major BCS conference, a team like Stanford that's clearly built to play a game like this, or a team like Oklahoma State that has beaten ranked opponent after ranked opponent, they would obviously deserve that shot. The trickier question is Boise State. We've talked about them a bit, and they could, if Stanford and Oklahoma State lose, which is not out of the question at all. Stanford has Oregon, and they showed some weaknesses on defense in that USC game. Oklahoma State, of course, has that Oklahoma game. An upset could happen for both of those teams. Boise State, probably not. They're probably going to go undefeated. Boise State or one loss Alabama LSU? Are you leaning towards Boise State on that one or not?
I've wanted for so long to put Boise State in a national championship game. The only issue is when you look at them compared to the loser of this game, assuming they went out, it's very hard to know what to do, because in the one hand, if you got that rematch and let's say Alabama wins this week, and then LSU finds their way back into it, and they beat Alabama in New Orleans, essentially a home game, what have you solved? Who's the real national
champion? Right, we need a rubber game.
You gotta have a rubber game, don't? I mean, like, again, I know they would be the national champions, right. LSU would, but it's one of those things where in the heart of all of us, we would say, well, who really is the best? We need it in a neutral field. I know that's not a reason to put Boise in the game,
right.
But it's kind of crazy to think about the fact that LSU, if they got back into it with a loss, would have home field, so you'd have two dueling home field games. It'd be a kind of a nutty scenario to think about.
I would lean Boise State strictly because this game is being decided on the field. Yes, it's in Alabama, but this game is being decided on the field. We can call this the national championship. Right. That's fine with me. I'm fine with calling this game the national championship, and then that game on January 9th, we can call a really great game between two great football teams. If that's how people want to rationalize it, that's fine, but I would probably rather see a rematch from a skill perspective. I think whoever loses this game is obviously a better team than Boise State, but I'd rather see an undefeated Boise State get rewarded, assuming, obviously, they were the only undefeated team left, other than maybe Houston. But the last question on kind of those hypotheticals, Boise State finds a way to lose two, and everybody's got one loss. Yes. Then do you definitely go with the rematch, or do you think about a team like an Oregon?
And what about a team like Oklahoma, who right now is in the best position to do it? I mean,
great point, because then they would jump Oklahoma State, obviously.
Yep. They're in the driver's seat right now, if you think about
it. That's a great point.
They could jump everybody.
Because if Stanford loses, they have to drop, and then, they would jump Oklahoma State with the win. Boise State with a loss would fall into the bottom. They'd fall out of the top 10.
I mean, it'd be so interesting to see, what do you do if Oklahoma wins out, and you have Oklahoma and a one-loss LSU? What do you do there? I mean, do you reward a team like Oklahoma that started as the number one team and worked their way back potentially into being in that discussion? Or do you go rematch at that point? It's kind of a scenario that the BCS, again, would have a nightmare solving, so maybe part of me wants to see it happen. But I have seen people that are still very confident that Oklahoma will be in the national championship game. And I didn't think about it until today. But if you really look at it, that's still a scenario that could happen in an instant. If some of these things unfold.
That's interesting. So we were just talking about, what about a one-loss SEC team, but what about a one-loss Oklahoma team? And they would probably be more likely to go with that over a rematch because of the storm that would be created if they did have a rematch.
And if we believe the Big 12 is the second best conference,
which we do,
football,
we have to,
and they win it, then maybe they would be back in it. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things where who would have thought that we'd already discussed them again, but the winner of the Big 12, if it's a one-loss team and it happens to be Oklahoma, they might be back in that game. So, you know, so many scenarios, and a lot, obviously, that we'll figure out here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, hopefully we get to keep seeing them play out. Right. You know, I mean, if Oklahoma State runs the table, they're in.
Yeah.
That's about the only thing we know at this point. Now, short of that, anything can happen. So we'll see what happens in this one. I guess we're both going with Alabama, but certainly not as confidently as we've picked against some of these teams in the past. I mean, LSU wouldn't be a major upset. They're the number one team in the country for a reason.
Yeah, not at all. LSU has everything they need to win this game. We'll see what happens.